Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to the Inside Lacrosse Division 3 Podcast. I'm Zach Babbo. I want to start off by thanking everybody who listened to last week's supersized two-part Division 3 Playoff Podcast. Hopefully gave you everything you needed to know heading into Sunday and helped explain some of how the field came to form between Steve Kadalka kind of explaining the setup and selection criteria and then a little bracketology in Part 2. I want to remind everybody to continue to go to InsideLacrosse.com and search the iTunes store for Inside Lacrosse for more of our network of Inside Lacrosse podcasts happening all week. We're going to continue to talk D3 playoffs today as my guest is Nazareth coach Rob Randall. The Golden Flyers won the Empire 8 and sealed up a spot in the NCAA tournament this weekend, but Randall had kind of a unique selection Sunday as he too served on the selection committee. Now that we've seen the brackets, Randall will leave some insight as to kind of where the Pool B and C bids came from, as well as some of the seedings and matchups. Just to review, the 2019 field was broken up into 19 AQs, 5 Pool C bids, which went to Stevens, Salisbury, Washington and Lee, Washington College, and Lynchburg, and 5 Pool B bids, which went to Otterbein, Suwannee, Colorado College, Center College, and Christopher Newport. The tournament kicks off this Wednesday with 13 games being played across a slate of different sites. Some of the ones to take note of: Stevens versus Montclair, rematch from the regular season; Cabrini versus Springfield; Washington College versus Colorado College; and Lynchburg versus St. Mary's. Looking beyond that, there's potential for a lot of interesting matchups in the second round, including if Randall's Nazareth team advances, where they'll play a Western New England University squad they lost to earlier this year. And with that, I guess let's move on to our interview with Nazareth coach Rob Randall, whose team is playing Castleton this Wednesday. Okay, the Inside Lacrosse Division 3 podcast is now joined by Nazareth coach Rob Randall. Coach, your Golden Flyers sit at number 9, I believe, in the USILA poll right now, but more importantly, you guys captured the Empire 8 AQ, and you're going on into the tournament to play Castleton in the first round. You had kind of, I guess, a more unique experience on Sunday night than maybe a lot of other AQ coaches. Instead of sitting around and kind of waiting to see who you guys may be playing, you were one of the coaches involved in the selection committee process and kind of setting up the overall tournament. You know, how does Sunday play out for you, I guess, you know, with your games wrapped up and then having to switch over and kind of put on that other hat of being a selection committee member thereafter?
Well, you know, we had lengthy discussions on Sunday morning about the Pool Cs and some different scenarios. We were on the phone for about 2 hours, and then we took a little break, and we got back on the phone at 5 o'clock, and we were on the phone for probably close to 4 hours trying to figure out, finalize the Pool Bs and the Pool Cs. And then just try to figure out all the seeding. So it was a pretty long day, you know, going from an emotional victory over Ithaca the afternoon before, and then getting right into you know, the selection process on Sunday.
I talked to Coach Kadalka at night, and you know, with his Lynchburg team being one of those Pool C teams, he was kind of having to jump on and off the call, particularly in discussing Pool C bids. You know, you guys had already made the tournament via the AQ, but then obviously they have to figure out where you sit, where you may be seated, all that. You know, what's that process like for you in terms of maybe having to kind of jump in and out of the conversation when all of a sudden Nazareth is part of, I guess, the seating or what have you kind of conversation?
Well, the nice thing about it, Zach, was that we knew we were in. So we knew we were going to fall into the mix somewhere. We just weren't sure exactly where. I felt pretty good about getting a 3 or a 4 or a 5 seed. But when it came to discussing the seedings in the North, I had to jump off the call. And those guys, you know, as a committee, made the decision that we were a 4th seed behind Cortland RIT and Tufts.
I guess, can you talk me through some of, you know, what were the Pool C discussions like? I know with, you know, my colleague Terry Foy, when he was talking to the Division One selection chair, they kind of got into conversations of, you know, bubble in, bubble out teams in terms of the ones that maybe were the first to jump into the bracket or the hardest ones to kind of rule out, the heavier selection criteria. I mean, you guys obviously had, you know, a small window of 5 teams, And a lot of teams that probably had cases, but definitely, you know, between probably maybe 5 to 10 that had very strong cases that you had to kind of really parse out.
You know, I've been on this committee now for 3 years, and this was as challenging a phone call as I've had, as we've had as a group. And like you said, with the 5 pool Cs, it is very limiting, and we fully understand that there's a lot of really good teams out there that aren't going to get the opportunity to play in the NCAA tournament. And, you know, from a pool C selection process, the strength was in the South this year. So, you know, some of those Southern teams were pretty easy to pick, you know, the first two or three teams, and then it got challenging. And then there was about, you know, 4, 5, 6 teams that were in the conversation for 2 spots. And it was a long and lengthy process, and there was a lot of reasons to pick a lot of different teams, and ultimately we felt like Stevens, you know, had that last spot, and you know, their strength of schedule was very solid, and they had quite a bit of activity in the ranked regionally ranked area.
Does that, you know, do the coaches, maybe your colleagues in that meeting look to you more in a situation like that in terms of maybe, you know, if you're talking to Washington, you talk to maybe somebody who's played them a lot, or, you know, since you guys are a conference mate of Stevens, maybe they kind of get you to give your assessment of what that team is or isn't, because you have a greater familiarity. I mean, it seems like in a situation like that, you kind of got to lean on people's, you know, familiarity with some teams and things like that, and obviously being in a conference with somebody would lend you a greater exposure to that team than maybe some other coaches.
Yes and no. I mean, it was pretty clear that the 4 teams in the South were clearly ahead of the teams in the North from a in region winning percentage, from a record versus regionally ranked teams, and certainly from a strength of schedule standpoint. So, you know, that was a little bit easier. When it did come to the North, it was certainly much more challenging for that 5th spot. I wouldn't say that the guys and the committee relied on me at all. It was a consensus by all of us. And I'm telling you, there was a ton of different scenarios and a lot of different discussions and a lot of great feedback from the committee members as to why certain teams are still in the conversation and why we picked who we picked. It was but it was very challenging. It was a very long and lengthy discussion, and you know, ultimately I think we made the right decision.
I know in talking to a lot of coaches on Sunday night, almost the kind of running theme was how, particularly if you were sitting and waiting for maybe one of those Pool C bids, when Salisbury lost to St. Mary's, suddenly everybody was sweating a bit more because Salisbury then falls into that Pool C, you know, pool. I guess, you know, what were maybe the you guys in the selection committee thinking when you see something like that? I mean, Salisbury so often kind of has that CAC locked up, and then suddenly for them to fall into the at-large pool, you know, there's one more team you guys got to consider. There's maybe the window getting a little thinner, or maybe it's the opposite. Maybe when a team like Salisbury that seems to have a fairly confident case as to their postseason, you know, involvement, does them getting into the pool make it a little easier because you can go, okay, well, that's a definite, and now we only have to figure out 4 instead of 5?
You know, to be honest with you, Zach, picking Salisbury was relatively easy. Their strength of schedule is significantly higher than anybody else's that were part of our discussion for the pool Cs. And the fact that they were you know, they had 5 wins in the region against regionally ranked teams, and arguably the biggest win over anybody else with their win over Roanoke College. So yes, that definitely took somebody else's spot, and it probably occupied a spot for one of the northern teams But picking Salisbury as a pool C overall was a relatively easy decision for the committee.
Once you guys have that field set, how difficult is it to try and then, you know, get the seedings, the matchups, all that stuff right? I mean, you know, we talk about Stevens. Stevens plays in a first-round rematch from a regular season game. There's a couple other rematches from the regular season kind of worked in there. And, you know, I know typically stuff like that, conference matchups you try and avoid, rematches you try and avoid as best you can. But obviously at a certain point when you have to factor in geography, all that kind of stuff, in building out a bracket like this, you're going to run into a couple of times where you have to make concessions on that. I mean, how much tinkering do you guys have to do to try and get something that seems to be as fair as possible and kind of meet all of these, you know, more stringent and practical requirements that the tournament has to reach as well?
It's tough. I mean, there's, like I said, there's a lot of different scenarios that came about. And, you know, with Middlebury and Collin College and Stevens, there was a lot of strength that all three teams brought to the table. You know, Stevens had more wins against regionally ranked teams, and they had beaten an Endicott team who had beaten Tufts. You know, so there's a lot of different types of discussions that are thrown out on the table, and so it's a very challenging phone call and a very tough decision on the committee's part.
So now you guys, you know, play Castleton in the first round, and obviously, you know, I guess from there you can kind of see your path if you happen to advance, you know, that you'll be, I guess you could say, in the same bracket as Cortland if you can make it all the way to the semifinals. I mean, when you see something like that, I guess just how do you start to gear up for your team's path into the playoffs here?
Well, to be honest with you, Zach, I mean, our complete focus is on Castleton State. I'm not thinking about anything else other than Castleton State. I mean, if we were to be fortunate enough to play a great game against Castleton, then we'd be thinking about the next round. But Cortland is not on our minds at all right now, and our focus is completely 100% on a very good Castleton team that's 15-3 and averaging 15 goals a game and have a very potent offense, and in particular with a great attack, and with an attackman that has 109 points. I mean, you know, that's pretty significant no matter how you slice it.
What do you think your team might be doing well right now? I mean, you guys are on about an 8-game win streak. You went undefeated to the Empire 8 and captured the AQ. You're 14-4 overall in the year. You're tied for eighth with WNL in a poll right now. You were alluding to before that you're looked at as one of the higher seeds in the North currently. You know, I guess, can you have an assessment of maybe how good or not you feel your team is right now? I know it's kind of a hard question maybe to answer, especially you don't want to build them up too high or too low right before heading to the playoffs. But you guys have had a pretty solid year so far.
Well, I think the one thing that stands out in my mind from about the midway point of the season, I think we've played much better defense. And that's a tribute to our players playing a lot smarter, and to our assistant coaches, Francis Donald and Jason LeSham, who've done a great job with those guys. And you know, when you get into crunch time, it's really about playing defense for us, and we have improved tremendously on the defensive end of the field. So I think that's probably the number one thing that we have in this last half of the season. But things that we've been consistent with all year long are the fact that we've been scoring a fair amount of goals. I like what we're doing offensively. We have some different guys that can score goals at different times. We kind of rely on different guys in different scenarios offensively. And then lastly, we've been very good at the faceoff. And Drew Simoneau, you know, in my opinion, is one of the best in the country. And he's broken the record for most ground balls in a season. He did that back, you know, six games ago or something like that, which is a record that was held, I think, since 1995 or 96 by Terry Getz. So, you know, he's doing a great job for us, and having the ball and having some guys that can score on offense certainly makes my life a little bit easier and our jobs as coaches a little bit easier.
You know, speaking of those guys who can score, when I was looking at your leading scorers, I noticed that Troy and Trevor, I'm probably going to destroy their last name here, Heffel. That you know, those guys that are 2 and 3 in scoring and obviously sharing the same last name, I imagine, is there a family connection there? Brothers?
They are. They're brothers.
Brothers?
They're brothers.
What's that like? I mean, two guys like that, you know, related to leading scorers in the team. I mean, does that speak to, I guess, the familiarity or connection that those guys have growing up playing together and all that?
No doubt about it. You know, I mean, it's great for me as their coach. Great for us as their coaches to have those guys around, but I think it's even nicer and more important for them to be playing together. I mean, what more could you want than to be playing with your brother, you know, and to be starting and to be scoring goals and sharing the ball and you know, passing to one another and knowing where each other is at the same time. So I think there's that type of chemistry there. And then probably even more importantly than that, from a parent standpoint, I mean, the parents love it. It makes their lives a little bit easier having to travel to one spot for games. The parents are extremely supportive. They're at just about all of our games, you know, traveling from Maine, and it's a really cool experience. And then you throw in our third guy, who certainly is not our third guy, but Luke Wooters, who is a great player as well. You know, and he broke Neil Paulus's record from 1995 for most goals in a season. So, you know, like I said, we're pretty dynamic on offense right now, and we just hope to keep it going.
Can you kind of talk about the way that unit might work together? I mean, particularly the two brothers have their connection, but is it a matter too of those three guys, the games complement each other well? You know, one kind of a crease guy, one a quarterback guy, you know, kind of the way that units like that seem to kind of come together well when each guy fills a particular role particularly well?
Yeah, they all have kind of a different role. I mean, Troy Heffel is a lefty, and he's as slick a lefty as I've seen. Trevor is a righty and a lefty, and he sees the field very well. He's a great ball handler, and Luke is a righty lefty, and you know, he's a good ball handler and a very good shooter. So they do all kind of complement each other pretty well.
In some ways, is the success you guys had this year at all surprising? I mean, obviously, you know your team better than anybody else would. And, you know, from an outside, I mean, I thought Nazareth was going to be better this year than they were last year, but I didn't necessarily know, you know, top 20 good, top 10 good. I think we had projected Stevens to probably win the Empire 8, and then you guys, you know, go on a tear through the league. And generally, you had a strong season overall. I mean, you know, coming off the first losing season in a while, you know, how maybe did you think this team was going to respond or build back this year?
You know, as a coach, I can't speak for others, but I'm never really sure. I have to be honest with you. I mean, I felt like we had a good group coming in, and we had a good fall, and had a pretty good preseason. We went down to Stevenson for our first game, and we were able to generate some offense, but you know, we gave up far too many goals, and that was kind of the case early in the year for us, just giving up too many goals. And you know, again, I'm coming back to the defensive side of the ball, where we've stepped up and we've played better defense, and I think that is one of the major keys to our success. But as a coach, you're never really sure. And as good as the fall went and as good as our preseason went, we also lost some really good players along the way. We've had four major injuries of kids that have been out for the whole year. And that started with Vinny Perillo, our best defenseman, towards ACL in the fall. So he's not been with us. And then Brian Wright, arguably our best midfielder from a year ago, went down in the third game of the season with a torn hamstring. So right off the top, we took a pretty good hit. Then we lost a freshman midfielder that was on our first midfield early in the season to a concussion, and he's been out all year. And another long stick middie, Kyle Pfister, who has been out all year with another concussion issue. So I was optimistic, but when you lose players, it certainly makes you think a little bit more about where you're going. And our focus was just to try and, you know, take one game at a time. And you know, fortunately for us, we had some other players in line that have stepped up and done a pretty good job.
You guys started the season against Stevenson in a loss. But, you know, I mean, I talked to Jay Kuhn when he came up to Stevenson, and you know, he was talking about how, I guess, he felt it was still a good game for his RIT squad in terms of, you know, it's still a great strength of schedule game. Stevenson is a great measuring stick to kind of, you know, test yourself against early in the year. Their loss was a little bit closer, but still, you know, I mean, did you get any sense like that of you come off a losing year, you lose that first game, but it's against a really, really good team? Does that kind of, you know, give you a good sense of where the team may or may not lay from there? Or was it maybe the opposite, where you lose that game and you see a lot of things you don't like, and that helps kind of steer you into the corrections that lead to the success you have through the rest of the season?
Well, there were certainly a lot of things that we left Stevenson with where we knew we had to improve. I mean, we made a lot of mistakes in the Stevenson game. It was our first game of the season, and we're playing arguably, you know, at the time, the best team in the country. And I still believe that they're one of the best teams in the country. So, you know, we learned a lot from that experience. But ultimately, we want to try and play as tough a schedule as we possibly can and throw our guys into the fire and see how they're going to come out of it. And while there was a lot of mistakes that we made in that game down there in Baltimore, we also did, I thought, you know, a lot of good things, especially on the offensive side. And we learned a great deal about who we were, and while it was a loss, I think it was an experience that we were able to take some positives from and some negatives and get better because of it.
Does the team have a certain edge or anything this year that, you know, you have a losing year last year, they didn't make the tournament, now that, you know, then you steamroll kind of your way through the Empire Eight, you're in the tournament now? I mean, is there a determination that maybe particularly a senior class kind of holds as they come off a rougher year?
You know, I wish I could say yes, but honestly, we don't. We only have four seniors, and two of them are not seeing any time. As I mentioned, Brian Wright is a midfielder that was our leading scorer from the midfield last year. He's been out all season, and we're hoping that he's going to decide to come back for a fifth year next year. So we haven't had him. So we're down to three seniors that are playing. One of them's a goalie, and Tim Doyle is our second string goalie right now. So now we're down to two seniors that are playing a whole lot of time for us, and Chris Peterson and Greg Wagner. So those guys are doing a great job in leading us, but we don't have a lot of senior representation on this team. So it's from an attitude standpoint, Greg Wagner and Chris Peterson have done an outstanding job, but it's not like we've got, you know, 10 seniors or 15 seniors that are you know, have a presence about them. We do have a presence from you know, the junior, sophomore, and junior classes, and even from the freshman class. I think there's a little bit more of an attitude. There's a little bit more of a confidence there. But it's certainly not based just on a senior leadership role.
So you guys missed the tournament last year, but you made it in 2011. So there are players on this team, I imagine, that have NCAA playoff experience. You have, I believe this is the eighth time you've taken a Nazareth team into the tournament. You know, what kind of experience can you build on or try and impart to your team maybe as you enter this kind of second half of the season?
Well, to be honest with you, we just love the fact that we're playing at home. That makes things a heck of a lot easier, especially for the first round games. I mean, there's been so many times when we've had to play an Empire 8 championship game on a Sunday and then turn around and play Wednesday afternoon. That really is a challenge. So we love the fact that we're at home. But to be honest with you, Zach, every experience has been a different experience for us, you know, and like I said, we're just trying to stay focused and enjoy this experience and cherish the moment, so to speak, and get ready for a really solid Castleton team that's coming in here today and for a 4 o'clock game tomorrow.
You've made some runs in the NCAA tournament before, and generally, you know, you've coached at the Division III level for a while. And D3 typically, even during the season, kind of has that whole Wednesday-Saturday turnaround. Obviously, that gets really magnified in the playoffs when, you know, you're doing Wednesday-Saturday and each game is to hopefully advance for one more. Is there some kind of, you know, trick or just have you learned any rhythms to the best way to handle that in terms of both keeping your team fresh, practiced, and also prepared and you know, you guys well scouted and all that kind of stuff on such short turnarounds from game to game?
That certainly is a challenge, and especially with the weather getting hotter. I mean, we've gone from, 25 to 35 degree weather to 70 degree weather in a matter of about a week. It was a very rough spring, weather-wise for us. I mean, we played Stevenson a couple weeks ago and it was 30 degrees and the wind was blowing and it was snowing and then we turn around and a week later we're playing in 70 degree weather. That is certainly a challenge for the guys. And I think the most important thing that we can do is to try our best to keep the kids healthy. And for us, sometimes the best way to do that is to let them rest a little bit. You know, last Thursday we'd come off our first round Empire 8 playoff win, and it took a fair amount out of us. It was a really hot day. We weren't accustomed to the weather. The kids were dragging, I felt, and so on Thursday we did a little bit of skeleton work with our offense, and we gave the defense off. They watched a little bit of film and, you know, tried to rest them up for Friday, have a good practice on Friday, and take on a great Ithaca team on last Saturday. So I think just trying to stay healthy and rested is our biggest challenge at this point.
With that short turnaround, with not much time to I guess, scout or run that many kind of, heavy game plan kind of things, and with playing some unfamiliar opponents. I mean, you guys don't play Castleton during the regular season. You know, it does at this point of the year, does it become much more about what your team's doing and what you guys are doing well than being able to go into a game and be able to say, okay, these are the things that they do that I know we can exploit or something like that?
No, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I know that there's coaches out there that love to scout and love to see their opponents play. And we do as well, but I don't put as much emphasis on what other teams are doing. We really need to, from my perspective, we need to focus on what we're doing. There's things that other teams are going to do that they're just going to do it, whether we have it scouted or not. So we want to really focus on what we're doing and hopefully do that the best that we can and see where the chips fall from there. I mean, it's always great to learn some tendencies about your opponents, you know, strengths and weaknesses, and what hand their strong hand is, or what they're doing, you know, from a riding perspective or from a clearing perspective. But honestly, if we're able to do what we do and do it to the best of our ability, I'm not as concerned about a scouting report. And some coaches may disagree with that 100%, but I mean, there's times when I feel like scouting is very overrated, and you know you can go and watch a team play five times, but if you don't pass and catch and you don't clear the ball the way you want to, that scouting report can be thrown out the window.
This might be kind of a hard question to project out to, but you know, I mean, you are an alumni of Nazareth. That seems to be a fairly common thing I found in the Division III world of you know, coaches kind of coming back to where they played and coaching again. I don't know if you've had talks with anybody who's maybe been able to do this or gotten close, but would the idea of maybe winning a title at your alma mater in some ways make it that much sweeter of you know, not just your team winning, but then it's also something you're bringing to your institution and a community that you've been a part of for so long?
I mean, that's always our goal, and always will be our goal, but there's so many things that have to happen for that to occur. You know, you have to make runs at the right time. You have to figure out ways to win close games. You have to have the ball bounce your way a little bit. You have to be lucky in certain situations. You know, our number one goal every year is to compete for the national championship. So, and that will never change. But there's a lot of things that have to happen for that to even occur before you can really even talk about it. So, but yeah, I mean, that's always our challenge.
And I want to ask you, because I mentioned Jay Kuhn before, and you know, he was a NAS player who played under you, and you know, you're a NAS alum. I mean, you're maybe used to now. Jake is over at RIT. You know, growing up out there, playing out there, I guess you have familiarity with that rivalry. I asked him about the NAS RIT rivalry since the two schools are so close and all the history there. You know, what's your kind of interpretation on that NAS RIT rivalry?
I mean, first of all, you know, those guys, Jake and his staff and his team, they've done an outstanding job this year. They have a great team. And again, in my opinion, one of the best in the country. You know, I mean, it's a great rivalry. The fact that it's so close, you know, there's always excitement for that game. And to be honest with you, you know, it's kind of nice for both of us, both Jake and I, that they're not in our conference, you know, that they went to the Liberty League and we remain in the Empire Eight. Because I think it takes a little bit of pressure off of both of us. You know, we love the game. The kids love playing the game. It's a huge crosstown rival, but, you know, it's obviously a very, very important game. But really, when it comes down to it, we need to be more focused on our Empire 8 games. And there's some great rivalries within the Empire 8 as well.
And, Coach, I kind of wanted to end on I'm dipping into a conversation I had a lot in the beginning of the year on these podcasts, but I know that you've served on the rules committee before. Obviously, in the beginning of the year, a lot of talk was dominated on all the new rule changes. Particularly, it seemed, you know, they affected maybe the D1 game more than D3, as most coaches I talked to said. You know, they didn't really think that the rule changes have influenced how they play. You know, maybe just we haven't really had this conversation with many coaches yet, and we were kind of waiting until the year ended. But so far, I mean, can you have an assessment of maybe what you think of how this year's rules committee, you know, the suggestions they made played out? Does it seem we've gotten the desired effects of up-tempo play and the like? Do you think the suggestions made have worked fairly well or not so far this year?
I'm a strong proponent of all the new rules. I think the new rules are great. I love the fact that the game has become faster. I don't think in Division III, to be honest with you, we had much of an issue with playing the game fast. I think that was a Division I driven rule. But honestly, I love the new rules. I think that the quick restart is an awesome thing. I think the officials have done a really good job of administering the timer on call. I love the fact that you only can hang on to the ball for a certain amount of time. I think they've done a good job administering face-offs. I love the rules the way they are, and I would be in full support of going with a full shot clock. I mean, I was watching a MLL game last night, and it was pretty cool, you know, to see that 60 second shot clock on. I thought it was a great thing. Lacrosse, in my opinion, is to be played at a fast pace, and every coach can coach the way they want, but the more the kids can get up and down, in my opinion, the more fun the game is, and the more that you can pressure, and the more that you can, you know, create shooting and scoring opportunities, and really create a lot of transition opportunities, both offensively and defensively. You know, I think it's more fun for the kids to play that way, and that's the way we've always tried to coach, and these rules have certainly encouraged playing that way.
All right, well, Coach Randall, thank you very much for letting me talk, you know, some selection committee, some rules, and some Nazareth with you here. Best of luck when you guys take on Castleton on Wednesday. What time is that game, actually?
It's 4 o'clock game, Zach.
4 o'clock. All right. Well, best of luck on Wednesday afternoon against Castleton, and hopefully as you guys advance on through the tournament here. And I'll be kind of curious to see where NASA goes here, because you guys have surprised me so far in your run, and I'd kind of like to see it extend for a little while, I think.
Well, great. Thank you. So would we.
Take care, Coach.
Thanks, Zach.